This afternoon, we're going to have a study or overview of James chapter 3. We've been going through James. We've been able to accomplish two chapters so far. At the end of chapter 2, we remember that James talked about faith and works and how, though we may have faith, if our faith is not shown and made manifest through our works, that our works of righteousness that glorify God and help our fellow man, if those kind of works are not evident with our faith, then James would tell us that that faith is, in fact, dead. It's useless, it's vain, it's of no effect in this life, here in this earth. James 3, it seems like he switches again. We know James is a very practical book, a very practical letter, that is, that he, that was probably distributed among the congregations of the Church of Christ, in the early days. But he switches again now, and, this chapter contains two main points. They probably go together really well, but you can have a separation of two separate sections. Verses 1 through 12, James teaches about controlling the tongue. And in these verses, he encourages Christians to understand the power and the danger of the tongue. And then the remaining verses, verses 13 through 18, James talks about wisdom. And he talks about two types of wisdom. He encourages Christians to understand the difference between a heavenly wisdom and that which is an earthly wisdom, one that's sensual and devilish. Beginning in verse 1 of this chapter, "My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation, for in many things we offend all. If any man offends not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body." So James begins by making an interesting cautionary statement, and he says, "Be not many masters." This is teachers, those of us who teach in a congregation. And he would caution that it's probably not a good idea to have every brother in the congregation want to be a teacher. And I know that sometimes that goes against what we think in congregations. But in fact, the teaching position is one of great responsibility, as everybody knows. It's one that requires trust. It's one that can be persuasive in what is said. And it's one that needs to be able to, as our brother talked about this morning, anything that's spoken from the pulpit needs to be backed up by the Word of God and by doctrine. And we remember that at the time that James wrote this, the New Testament was not around in the same fashion that we have today. They had the Old Testament. They could teach lessons to the congregations out of that. But also, teachers in that day and time received inspiration from the Holy Spirit. We know that Paul talked about those who would teach in the congregation in an orderly fashion, one by one. But if someone in a congregation, a brother, had something that he had been delivered with by God at that time, that the one who was speaking would need to sit down and the other brother could stand up and give the inspiration from God. And so at that time, when James said, "Be not many masters," he probably had the idea that this was a specific position with a specific work in the congregation. And so though it was something that could be desired, it wasn't something that everybody had that God-given ability or talent to be able to do. But in the context that we have before us this afternoon, he is really talking about the tongue. And so he says when he talks about teachers, he mentions that they have a stricter judgment. And I believe that that pertains to the responsibility that teachers have. We also have scriptures that talk about the same when in reference to the eldership, that they would be held more accountable because of the responsibility that they had. But he says that as a matter of probably simply being human beings, we offend in all. Now, he is talking about himself and these teachers at the time, because he says, we shall receive the greater condemnation. We offend all. So James was very, very cognizant of how much a teacher could affect a congregation. And he makes a statement that if we are able to not offend in word as we teach, if we're able to actually not offend in word, he says that same person is a perfect or a mature man and able to keep his whole body in control. And so this is sort of a hint on what he's going to talk about through the rest of this first part of this chapter, the power and the danger of the tongue. In verse 3 and 4, behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Behold also the ships, which though they be so great and are driven of fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor listeth. And so here we see James talking about the power of the tongue. And it's not an all-encompassing power, but he's talking here about the power to direct, the power to show a direction to a congregation. So like a bit in a horse's mouth, we know that with just a little tug on the reins because of that bit, a horse could be directed to one direction or another. And like a large ship, a large naval vessel, we know that they can be directed one way or the other by a very small, it says helm here. Some translations say rudder. But in either case, we know that the helm itself, like the old, you can picture the old wheels of the schooners and things, in comparison to the ship, they are very small. And the same with the rudder that directs the ship in the rear. So these examples, these illustrations, show that the tongue, even though it's a small member of our body, is able to direct in a very big way. So not only can it direct our body, but it can direct the body of a congregation. If I stand up here and I give false doctrines and false statements, my think-sos, my opinions, a bunch of fables or tales, that could lead members of the congregation to go in a direction that is away from God. And the reason why is because those kind of things from a teacher's mouth can be persuasive. And people can trust that, even if it is contrary to what the scriptures say. And so these are very important things. This is very important to realize that the tongue has great power, and it requires great responsibility. Verses 5 and 6. Even so, the tongue is a little member, and boasteth great things. Behold, How great a matter a little fire kindleth. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire of hell. Now, I'm not sure if James is really trying to be, you know, hyperbolic, like show that the tongue is bigger than what it really is, or has such an effect. But what he describes here shows us that the danger of the tongue is comparable to the danger of a small spark causing a huge forest fire. And I know we have a brother and sister who from California in our audience now, and I think they could probably tell us a lot about forest fires from being in California. They are a dangerous thing. I remember one time my wife and I were on a road, and we were stopped. And up in the hills, there was a fire that was going. And we could see the engines up on the road and everything, and they were fighting the fire. And at one point, an amazing thing happened. The personnel manning those engines and trying to fight the fire all of a sudden retreated, ran into their engines, and took off down the road. And I do not know how they knew this. I imagine it's from experience. But that fire had a life of its own. And it, no sooner than they were gone, swept across the road to the other side. Now, we were safe, and it didn't affect us, but just it was amazing at the life of such a destructive thing can have. And so the tongue itself, James says, is a little member, but it boasts great things. It has a lot of power, and there's a lot of danger in it if it's misused. And so as Christians, as teachers, as pillars of the congregation, it is our responsibility in this world to, as much as possible, rein in our tongues and conform them to the word that we've been given by God. Because we don't want to be responsible for lighting a great forest fire in the church or in our communities. These kind of things we need to watch out for. James says that the tongue can be a world of iniquity. And I'm not sure really how to explain that, except that it sounds huge, doesn't it? It sounds big. When we talk about a world, that's huge. And its effect can be huge. It's capable of defiling the whole body. So, other scriptures talk to us about the heart. And Jesus, I believe, said that, you know, out of the heart comes not only the things that we say, but maybe the things that we do. And so, in a sense, you know, our tongue may be one of the first things that shows whether our heart is dwelling on things that are good and pure, or dwelling on things that are not good and pure. But going further, that tongue can also cause the whole body to be defiled. And he says, capable of setting on fire the course of nature. I believe I looked up the phrase course of nature, and it has in reference like all of creation, like the creation that God created and the order that was put into it, the laws, all of those things are encompassed in this phrase, course of nature. And the tongue is so powerful that it has in the ability to set that on fire. A lot of these things I don't really understand in my mind, except that I know James is talking about something very dangerous, something that needs to be controlled. Indeed, he says it can be set on fire by hell. Verse 7. For every kind of beasts and of birds and of serpents and of things in the sea is tamed and hath been tamed of mankind. But the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. Again, he's talked about the power of the tongue, the danger of the tongue, and he says that it needs to be controlled, but then in this verse, he talks about how difficult it is to control. And so this is very, James is bringing out the human condition. He knows how hard this can be. He knows that it can be a deadly poison, and it's unruly. But yet, he cautions that it must be controlled. Verse 9, therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? Either a vine, figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. And so with this example, or a few examples here, he talks about how the tongue can do something that should not be able to be done. He talks about cursing man who is made in the image of God. And he's talked about blessing God with the same tongue, with the same tool. And he talks about a fountain that can't spring forth both fresh and sweet water and salty, bitter water. And he talks about the agriculture. Talks about figs that don't bear olives. And grapevines that don't bear figs. And so, in a sense, he's asking the question, how is it that the tongue is something that can do both blessing and cursing? Well, again, it's a caution about using it for blessing and not cursing. Because it doesn't make sense that it would do both. Next, we go to verse 13. And this is where he starts talking about wisdom. And wisdom is something that James is giving to us as, I think, a tool to help control the tongue. James has talked about wisdom before, but here he says, who is a wise man endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. So this is the true display of wisdom and understanding. It's seen in one's conduct, and that conduct is done with meekness. Verses 14 through 16. But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not, and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. So, here James talks about the display of earthly wisdom. He says it's full of bitter envy. It's self-seeking. It's boasting, and it's lying. Those kind of things come from earthly wisdom. It's not a wisdom that's from above, but it's sensual and demonic or devilish. And it produces confusion and every evil thing. Finally, in verses 17 through 18, After all that, I'm thankful that James gives these last verses, because it's been difficult to go through this chapter that's talked about such a dangerous and unruly evil and a wisdom that's earthly. Those kind of things, yes, we need to watch out for. But there is a wisdom that we can pray for, as James would talk about in chapter 1, a wisdom that is from above in verse 17. He says it's first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, and without hypocrisy, things that James has talked about before. In verse 18, and the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. So this is the view of the heavenly wisdom that James gives us, one that is pure, one that is full of peace and gives peace, one that is gentle and meek, one that is willing to yield, one that's full of mercy and good fruits. There's no partiality, no prejudice in it. There's no hypocrisy, saying one thing and doing another. This is wisdom that produces the fruit of righteousness. And he says that those that produce this fruit are peacemakers, because they sow in peace. So in conclusion, James began this chapter with a caution against many becoming teachers. In view of the stricter judgment he talked about that awaits teachers, one should be sure that they possess the maturity and the self-control necessary to control the tongue. James then provided a series of illustrations to demonstrate the power and the danger of the tongue and the difficulty of taming it, and how we can easily be inconsistent in our use of it. Some, maybe, as teachers, they had sought to be so that they could appear to be wise. But James wrote that wisdom and understanding are to be shown by our conduct and to be done in meekness. He then defined and contrasted the differences between the two kinds of wisdom, one that comes from above, from heaven, one that is earthly and causes confusion in every evil thing, but the one from heaven produces peace and the peaceable fruit of righteousness. This is our lesson this afternoon. If you're subject to the gospel call, we invite you to come forward while we stand and sing.